The Macau, it gets to be really expensive. The type of lighting, actually we're using LEDs these days. It's funny, we put the new markers up. I sent a picture to a few people, and they kept asking me, where do you put the diesel? It's so funny. The concept of 1 second on, 3 seconds off, including the markers, which for some reason Billy didn't do, which is the requirement of the law. The law now actually states that any towers that are over 350 feet have to change to that system. Not for the painting, but for the birds. So, oh well, towers are for the birds. What can I say? K2RWK, two things.
Hey, thank you for that info. What was the other subject you wanted to discuss, Eric?
Well, the closing of the TV auction. And the movement, actually, the clock has already started for 39 months where everyone has to complete their changes.
So I think you're saying there's another frequency auction about to take place, and these are the channels, UHF channels, that are about to be auctioned off. Is that what's about to happen, Eric?
No, what I'm saying is the current auction is now completed. And they were, at least Congress was expecting $15 billion. And at the close of the auction now, Congress is going to get $1.25 billion. And a number of TV channels will disappear, and a lot of TV channels have to change the frequency with which they're on. And I'm going to drop, and I'll give you an example of what we have to do.
Yeah, and also you're going to tell us what channels disappeared for broadcast purposes. Go ahead.
Believe it or not, anything higher than 30 goes bye-bye.
Okay, and what change does your particular organization have to make?
That's not 30, 35, sorry. Channel 21 will be moving to channel 32, RF. And channel 13 will be moving to channel 12 RF. WPIX, which is 11, will be moving to channel 13, VHX. And they haven't released all the changes yet, but these are just the ones that I know about at this point. And there's actually a station which is on 13, HYY, which is the PBS station in Philadelphia. They're on 13. I think they're moving to, they're either moving to 11 or 10, I forget. But anyway, things are shifting around. The highest sold station was RNN in our area, which is up in Westchester. And they sold their airspace for $313 million.
Now, these moves seem like musical chairs. It seems like there's no great benefit. 31 goes to 32, 13 goes to 12, 11 goes to 13. What's the rationale for those frequency shifts? It obviously costs money to modify transmitters, and is it somehow giving more desirable coverage areas? Over to you, Eric.
No, what's actually, there's a piece of software that looks at these, you can think of it like Langley Rice, but it's been modified. It looks at the interference curvatures between stations. Some stations will actually wind up using the same RF frequency, whereas a deal will be made between station A and station B, where station B actually has your transmitter, and station your quality of high definition on some of these transmit standard definitions. ATSC3, which the FCC has now actually opened the door to, will probably be finished and getting out there within the next 6 months to a year. That, of course, is a different method of transmission, which is CLFDM, which will actually allow for a data bit rate of around 35 megabits as opposed to our 19.39, which we currently have. It's a pack more stuff in there. You can also transmit 4K using a HBC, which is a HEVC, which is a high efficiency video codec, which will allow the transmission of 4K over the air. And some stations, like ONN, sold their frequency completely. They won't be moving anywhere. They're just simply going off the air, and will continue their services on cable and satellite.
Question. Yeah, I've got a bunch of questions as to what's the latest going on with advanced...
Repeater, timeout.
Advanced Television Selection Committee and so on. The person who just said question, who was that? Go right ahead with your question.
This is WA2RYY. My question is, when this ATSC 3 goes into effect, will existing equipment work or not work with that signal over the air?
Okay, so that's a combined question, as I see it, Eric. What are we really about to get in the next year? And will our current equipment handle it? KE2EJ, after waiting some beeps, even though we didn't, K2RIW.
A2RIW, K2J. Well, the short and long answer of that question is no, your current equipment will not work with the new standard. Mike, when we first went to high definition, the government gave out, government issued coupons for converter boxes, so that's how your converter box was $20 or $25. We suspect that they may do something similar. So that way you can have an ATSC receiver box, which will then make HDMI, which will go into your current receiver. I don't see them making a box that will convert from ATSC 3 to ATSC 2, which we currently are on, and have it come out of the box RF. So if you remember, like your VCR would come out on channel 3, that kind of thing, that's not going to happen. It'll be, the box will make video and audio, and you'll plug it into your monitor. Even though it may be an HD receiver that receives ATSC. Now, just because ATSC 3 is coming around doesn't mean that ATSC 2 will disappear. Let me let it drop. What will happen, like in our case, when we finally get there, we may decide that channel 32, which is actually channel 21, will be the ATSC 3 transmitter, and channel 15 will continue to be ATSC 2 until such time where that people turn off ATSC 2. What some folks are thinking is that, well, we have all these multiple channels, we'll stuff them all as SD on a ATSC system, and we'll do the really beautiful super high def and high def, so we have more bandwidth, we can do a lot of that stuff on the ATSC 3 transmitter. So across the country there'll be different variations of that. K2RWK2J.
A current over-the-air digital standard, ATSB, by my standards and by maybe Joe's standards, is quite vulnerable to certain kinds of impulse noise, but it's very vulnerable to co-channel interference. A signal coming from some other area sitting on top of your particular channel is going to wipe it out pretty fast. Maybe it's because I've not got the latest and the greatest in the adapting of my particular demodulator. But now when we go over to ATS-free COFDM, will some of that vulnerability improve? The fact that we're going to go from 19.9 megabits to 35 megabits and 4K, sounds like we're going to get higher fidelity, bigger pictures. That's the good news. But how are we going to be doing on these vulnerability issues? Is there any measured data along those lines, Eric? KE2EJ, K2IW?
K2RIW, K2EJ. Well, actually, there's going to be a lot of improvement, but there's a trade-off. You pay for it. your COFDM will be transmitting, in essence, thousands of carriers. And as you run into interference, what will happen is the receivers will not utilize the entire RF spectrum to create pictures, do it at a lower resolution. Not exactly lower resolution. The way the system is built is that it will allow a handheld receiver that might be built in your phone, but it's only using maybe 2 megabits or 3 megabits, it will allow it to extract that information from this huge signal that's being transmitted by only using certain points, so to speak, within that constellation. It's a little more complicated than that, but yeah, there's a lot of improvements in terms of being able to deal with impulse noise and some of the terrestrial problems that we have. We don't realize that most of Europe, when they transmit digital, they're transmitting COFDM with various different places. Whereas our ATSC-3 will be a COFDM with a very specific flavor, which is associated with the format. And it has the ability for you to use reduced portions of it and still have usable signals. So, in Europe, the way they use COFDM, by the way, it takes more power to transmit it. That's why most of the new transmitters are coming out with Doherty amplifiers, where there's a, in essence, a Class C amplifier along with the Class A amplifier just to transmit peak information. K2RIW, K2K.
When we switched over from analog television to digital television over the air broadcast a few years ago, I'm guessing that the, I can't think of the guy's name right now, he was predicting that the transmitters could go down to lower power because greater threshold is going to take place. So most of our video transmitters transmit lower power. I think that was a bit optimistic. I think that's a contributing factor to why the broadcast range on digital television appears to be considerably smaller than it was with analog. Now with this new COFDM ATS-3, where slightly higher power is going to be used, are we going to recover some of that range? That's question number one. And question number two, if I'm getting a rather weak signal in my particular location, will I have the ability to select a lower bit rate, which might give me an increased threshold, and still get the picture? KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIW, K2J. Alright, we've got a couple things here that involve in this. One is, well, let's just call it signal noise. It's MER, but we'll deal with it as signal noise. A good ATSC transmitter should produce a SNR that's greater than 30 dB. Alright? Actually, my transmitters make 34, 35, 36. The threshold at which the receiver will receive a signal is around 15.7 dB. So that gives you the range at which HVSB operates. Okay. And by the way, you didn't really get a reduction in coverage area that much. It's really small. You're just in a bad place because you have this big hill in the way. You know, your TV set C is a sink because that's where all the power is. Whereas, of course, in Europe, it's completely the opposite. But that's because they have smaller areas in which they have to cover. You cover something like New York State, you're dealing with, you know, 4 or 5 countries in Europe or more in terms of land there. But that ratio between where the threshold is a bit larger with COFDM. You can actually get that SNR number down to like 7 or 8. You're not going to get high definition. You'll get a picture. It might be blocking at you, but you'll still get it. So, yeah, there'll be improvement in that respect. But
repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
We lost the last 2 sentences, Eric. Too bad. Spagnoli made predictions that much lower power output transmitters could be used with the new digital over-the-air techniques, and I think he was optimistic.
I wouldn't call it optimistic. I'll give you the facts.
Well, analog television, lots of people in eastern Suffolk County used to watch over-the-air analog television. A huge percentage of the population on Long Island appears to be out of range of now the new digital techniques. So it's not just my local hill. I'm convinced that almost everybody is experiencing significantly less range with digital television. Over to you, Eric.
You have to say, what was the quality of service that people were getting in analog? And what's acceptable and what's not? We actually did a survey, Tom and I, and we went out as far as the Prune Barren to see how well we could pick up WNHT in New York State with a reference antenna that I put together in a 15-foot mast. And to do it right, I mean, we got out as far as, not quite close. And by the water, mind you, we had no problem picking up most of this stuff. We went by, we were out in Iceland, and there were some areas there where it was kind of a little problematic, depending upon where you were. Down by the Robert Moses Causeway, and that part of Jones Beach on the island side of it, pretty much did everything without a problem. Cable kind of offered a lot more stuff in the olden days, so people switched to cable. That made perception easier. We had a drop. And of course, when you saw a nice picture from cable, that had some noise in it, especially if you were way out in the system. But it was still better looking than what you were getting off the air. Don't forget, with analog TV, you can just have the sync lock up and watch a fuzzy picture through snow, and people were plenty happy with that. That doesn't happen with digital. Either you got it or you don't. You've either got the enough signal, and you get it, or you're just beyond that cliff, you don't get it. With the analog, you can still go another 20 or 30% and still have a viewable picture. But it wouldn't be like you were where you were getting a full, solid, noise-free 45, 50 dB signal to noise ratio for an analog signal. So, there's a trade-off.
WS, Duane.
Go right ahead, Paul.
I was wondering, with a new system, for instance, I'm in Rock Hockma, and without these amplifiers, I have these three amplifiers that I plug in all over to the different speakers. I mean, I could get maybe two or three stations. Now, with the amplifiers, I probably get about 30 stations. No problem. Still have a problem with Channel 4 for some reason, but I'm not sure I get 21, 13, 2, 5, 9, all the regular stations, but many, many more. But without the amplifiers, almost nothing. Useless. I was wondering if with the new system, Eric, if these amplifiers, if they would work. It looks like we have to throw the boxes away, but what about the amplifiers? Back to you, Dick.
Go ahead, Eric, give us a little bit more audio again, please.
Sorry, Dick. K2RWK3J.
Well, as long as the amplifiers are clean and they don't have a lot of mixing products that are going on, the amplifiers will be fine with the CLFDN. But one of the problems which people will have with amplifiers and HVSB, which you will have with CLFDM, if you start hitting the front end with too much and it starts to splatter all over the place, you're going to have those kinds of issues. People have to put the amplifiers in. The gain is so high that it just floods the receiver with all sorts of noise and IP3 products that it doesn't get anything. So you do it right, it'll be fine and dandy.
I've forgotten the brand name. You know what brand name of television I bought recently. Not very expensive digital television, but at least I've got a solid-state television with a flat screen.
Dick.
What was that again?
You have Vizio, the same as me.
Okay. My Vizio set. What's the chances, Eric, that if I add a preamplifier to my Vizio, I will see more channels?
No, you pretty much get everything now, don't you?
Yes and no. Channel 9-2, beautiful. 9-3, 9-4, which is a different frequency. No, very intermittent. And Paul's having trouble with channel 4. Is your set of Vizio, Paul, and are you seeing more channels because you added a preamplifier on your Vizio? WS2N, K2RIW?
I don't even use the Vizio for all, but yeah, that's strictly the cable. But I've got, three other sets, different locations that I use boxes, and each one has its own box, and each one is by a different company. But I have them all tied into only one amplifier. That amplifier is plugged in all the time. You plug it into the AC, in and out for the coax. And then I have a splitter that goes to all three TVs. And then, from that point, each TV has its own converter box, and I'm off to the races. That's the setup here, Dick. Back to you.
One.
W2YY. I think the problem that Paul is having is probably the channels he's trying to listen to view still have that scalloped pattern, as we were talking about a couple of years ago. That still exists over the air on RF-33, RF-28, and RF-38. And because of this, I did some experimentation a couple of years ago and purposely put some attenuation ahead of a converter to purposely lower the signal to the converter. They were the first channels to go bye-bye.
I'd love to be going back to my Radio Shack converter, which I used in front of my old-fashioned analog set. The Radio Shack converter had a couple of characteristics I really like. When you got information on the screen, the lettering was big enough that I didn't need my binoculars in order to be able to read it at a normal living room distance. Number two, it would allow me to see what the next program on the next half hour or the next hour was going to be. The Vizio doesn't give me that. There's a number of features that the Radio Shack converter has. I'm tempted to put that back into the system, if you know what I mean, and only feed video into the Vizio. Is that going to work? I haven't done the experiment yet. Let's see if Eric has got any opinions on this one. K2EJ, K2IW.
K2IW, K2EJ. All right, two things. One, going back to the scalloping that Joe was talking about, he's close enough to see that. That's the backfill antenna causing that step. So the higher you get, that diminishes. Paul de Montcalcamo, I don't think that. Besides, he's pretty much in the northern part of the island, so to speak. A little bit more in the middle. As far as the guide information, that's really the manufacturer's option, whether they want to make it available or not. Don't forget, when digital first came out, everybody made that push to put as many of the features as possible into the receivers, but as time went on, some people didn't want to bother to write the software for it anymore, so. That's why when you said you were going to go out and buy stuff, and I said to you, you have to go look at each one and look at their features, because you'll find some sets that give you the full guide, and some sets that give you just the current show that's playing, and there's some sets that'll actually give you the next three shows after the show that you're watching. So that's kind of the way it is. And with the ATSC3, when those receivers come around, I suspect there'll be something of that nature happening again over time. Interestingly enough, though, with the ATSC3, you can actually get an RJ45 out of the back of it, plug it straight into your computer. There's a lot of interesting stuff that APS-3 will do or can do, which actually the Koreans have it going now. They've already started distributing it from HYWK2J.
Hey, Jack WS, do I have one more comment?
Go ahead, Paul.
You should try the amplifier. You know, I had that one by Philips. That was great. I tried another one by, Radio Shack had one. I can go get you the model number on that. And these are all like $10, $15. I think I got one on sale from Radio Shack for like $10 one. And I just leave it plugged in. I have one other one as a backup. I'm waiting for the other one to explode, but it just keeps going and going, you know? They were getting hard to get, so I think you have to get them probably online now, unless you still have a Radio Shack open near you. But they're good. They say 10 dB. Whatever it is, it's a big difference, I find. Extremely big difference when you plug that in. I was shocked. I do have an antenna on the chimney, so it's only about, the antenna's maybe about 23 feet above ground, that's it. But it's good enough. Without the antenna, you're really, really in trouble. Back to you there.
Oh, by the way, Dick, there are some preamps that have horrible root delay. They don't work well.
So I've got to do a good job of choosing the preamplifier. If I add a preamplifier to, say, my Vizio set, and if I now get more channels, is that because the Vizio front end is shy on noise figure? Is it because the preamplifier gives me a little bit more saturation effects that are somehow desirable on an 8 VSB signal? If the preamplifier makes an improvement on, say, my Vizio set or on one of my converter boxes, is it a noise figure improvement or is there something else going on here? Eric, KE2EJ, KQIW?
Maybe a combination of things. How the particular tuner's front end is to start with, and the equalizer associated with it, but also the thing that separates I and Q from the RF. That's also a big deal. Some preamps are actually not flat across the 6 megahertz that you tune to. And you actually sometimes increase the noise, but you actually raise the tip of the training signal, which is the pilot. And if you can get the pilot up there enough beyond the noise, you'll get the thing to lock up.
If I intentionally made a preamplifier that emphasized the pilot, would I get deeper, weak signal reception, Eric?
How that's relative. In many cases, yes, in other cases, no. It depends upon the ratio of noise to signal.
Okay. I am guessing the most important thing about that pilot is its phase. It's a reference-like signal for really starting the whole demodulation process. Is there some way that I could derive that pilot signal and artificially inject it, very similar to what you and I do with single sideband reception? We re-inject the missing carrier and get a hell of a lot more threshold improvement. If I've got a smart enough circuit generating that pilot, maybe reference to the Bureau of Standards, could I make an improvement? Over to you, Eric.
Okay. That's really a complex answer. The pilot is not necessarily, let's say, just another operator. It's transmitting a signal on top of the rest of the signal that's there. It's actually derived from the trellis and the two random number generators. So if you were just to make a single tone and say, okay, that's the pilot, that's not going to work.
If I use a whole lot of intelligence in the way I derive the exact phase and frequency of the pilot and re-injected it, is there a way I could make an improvement? Over to you, Eric.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. If you were able to extract enough information from the incoming signal to try and phase lock another oscillator to it, you didn't need it in the first place.
Okay. But it's the fuzziness of the pilot that really goops up my converter. And If it's got the right kind of equalizer and whatever, tolerating multipath and all this jazz, you're telling me that a more distinct, higher signal-to-noise ratio pilot may not give me an improvement? Over to you, Eric. Maybe you're telling me that the information that the pilot must contain, exact frequency and phase, reference to the rest of the video being transmitted, that my chances of deriving that correctly, accurately, are essentially out of the question. Over to you, Eric.
Now, let me flip that around to you. If you are able to derive the information that you need to create the pilot again, you didn't need to create the pilot again because you got enough information. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. But now let's assume that the real video carrier I'm getting, so to speak, the whole video information I'm getting, is rather poor in signal-to-noise ratio and has some co-channel interference mixed into it. If by some other external means, independent of that signal, I could derive an accurate pilot, would it give me an advantage?
Okay. If you remember, a year ago, 6 months ago, whatever it was, we were having this discussion about doing it synchronously with the what's being sent out from the transmitting facility. If you can get the timing, you don't even need the pilot. But the pilot is really only to train the receiver to get the equalizer in about the right place so it can actually start to decode everything. But it isn't absolutely necessary. And there is no video. The only thing that's being transmitted is the digits. So, how the stream is organized and what's in the stream when you decode it, makes the relative audio and video information, or data, or guide, or private data, even. Actually, we have something called the PID 911, which has the president's message in it. It's part of the EAS system. HESC-3 is going to resolve some of those issues because it's a little bit of a better system in terms of the receiver's ability to suck it out of the air.
WS2M with the model number, if you want to.
Yes, I do, but not right now, Paul. 15.7 dB of signal-to-noise ratio is required right now. Is that approximately the same requirement that I'll need with the COFDM, Paul? Eric?
No, it's going to be lower. It's going to be something I have to look it up. I'm just trying to pull it out of the back of my brain. I was reading about it a couple of weeks ago. It's considerably lower, not that much. It's going to be something like this. If it's 15.7 HBSB, it may be like 10 or 11 for COFDM.
If I was willing to go out and spend some more money in buying a good digital television receiver, and you're telling me that I've got to try out all of those program guides on all of these sets to find out what features they've got, and I presume that the Consumer's Report doesn't go into that much depth, is there any other journal I could find that'll tell me the features of the program guide? Do I have no choice but to actually go and touch every one of those sets to find out the quality of the program guide? Is there no other approach? KE2EJ, K2LAW.
Well, as far as I know, and I'm not one that really sticks his nose into the consumer end of the world that much, of many of the reviews that I've read, they don't bother to get into the details of the things that you and I might be interested in. They'll say, it's got guides. And what does that mean? It's like the difference between, Fios' guide and Cablevision's guide. Whereas at Cablevision, you have to go to the guide channel. And Fios, they have a button that says guide, I'm not aware of any Consumer's Report or anything like that actually dives into the facilities of the set besides its ability to receive pictures. We have what's quote-unquote smart TVs, but they're essentially apps that are all driven over the internet, not over the air.
Earlier, were you kidding when you said that the program guide on some sets will tell me not just what the next half hour is going to be, but 1, 2, or 3 hours ahead? Are you telling me that the over-the-air broadcast gives you guide information some 2, 3, 4 programs ahead? Is that information really there that, in theory, could be demodulated into my set? Or were you just kidding? KE2, and are only some channels doing that? KE2EJ, K2RIW?
K2RIW, KE2EJ, well, we're the broadcast, and we get to choose how much of that information we're going to put out there. Naturally, we'll go into the encoder with the entire day's worth of programming. But the way the streams are set up and the way the paradigm is set up, we generally transmit about 3 to 4 hours of advanced programming information, as opposed to what you see on cable, which can be weeks ahead. There are some stations that will actually transmit a whole day's worth of program guide information, but that sucks up a little bit of your stream data. And it also makes changing channels and stuff like that a bit slower.
That was going to be my next question. If a couple of programs ahead in the program guide of the over-the-air broadcast is being included, does that mean when I flip to that new channel, that's a great big round robin, so to speak, and I have to wait until the current program comes around in order to tell me what I'm watching? So I think it's going to be a longer wait time to get the program guide information if the broadcaster is transmitting that many hours ahead. That's a guess on my part. Is that close? KE2EJ, K2RIW?
Now, there's a couple of different approaches to making that happen. K2RIW, K2EJ. I think we're doing it now, and every 350 milliseconds, we send out an EIT, which is an electronic information table packet. And how you order them together, and how they're interspaced in the stream that you're transmitting, it's really such a tiny little fraction. But you're only sending, the first line to the first 250 milliseconds, and then another little bit to the next 350 milliseconds, and so on and so forth. Whereas we could, every 350 milliseconds, send, say, 2 programs worth within those packets, and actually wind up causing problems with audio and picture because we're occupying too much time trying to send that data. But if you look at it as a recursive recycling thing that's happening every specific period, and by the way, there's EITs, which are guide information tables, there's RTTs, which is a rating table, there is a system timetable, there is a virtual channel table, there's all these little bits of packet information that occur every X number of tens of, or hundreds of milliseconds in the stream that's happening over and over again. And as you add more stuff and you add more channels, it takes a little while for stuff to build up in the buffer in order for it to be displayed to you. So yeah, if we send a whole day's worth of stuff, you're going to be waiting a while before you see it.
Whenever I flip to channel 7-1, ABC, the program guide comes up essentially immediately. I switch to anything with PIX, 11-123. There are times I have to wait a long time before any program guide shows up. Is that a fault of my set, or is it a difference in what they're transmitting, Paul? I mean, Eric, K2EJ, K2IW.
Okay, there's different manufacturers that make something called a multiplexer. And then there's something called a piece of creator, a guide table creator. And they're made by different manufacturers. With PIX, happen to know that they're using harmonic stuff that's a bit old. Whereas ABC is using, they're using the stuff that Harris put out. It's now known as Gates Air, and it's a bit newer.
so different manufacturers, and then of course the individual station engineer or the chief engineer decides how they want to do things. So yeah, there's differences. It's not your TV set.
Yeah, we've been keeping Andy waiting an awful long time. I hope Andy is still with us. KD2, Mike Tango Papa. Hope you're still with us, Andy. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Dick, you want that model number before you go to Andy WS1?
Negative. Go ahead, Andy, if you're there. Yeah, we did keep him waiting too long. Go ahead with that model number of your preamplifier, Paul.
Yeah, it's Radio Shack cable TV amplifier. Don't let the cable TV fool you. It works great over the air. And when you start reading the directions, you realize it's for both. You should have advertised it that way. I got the box. And, well, if you put this is the part, actual part number, this, you know, for Radio Shack. You put it 150-2505. And put that into the where. So, you know, for Radio Shack, and you'll see what I'm looking at. And they call it actually a bi-directional amplifier. So you could hook it up to your cable system and you could, you know, use your remote to send signals as well as receive them. It's got a forward path frequency of between 54 and 1,000 megahertz. And it's got a reverse path between 4 and 40 megahertz. Gain up to 10 dB, they claim. And by the way, I like the RCA converter box for the guys. Back to you, Dick.
What does the RCA converter box guide look like, Paul?
Well, it's bigger than these other off brands that I have. I forgot what I have on the other one. And it does go ahead about, it only goes ahead about 2 hours or so. Not much. But it's easy to see. Closed captions, very easy to see. I don't know if you use that. That works great. And I'm using it on a regular CRT screen. No problem. I found that to be the best out of the three boxes I have. I don't have the Radio Shack box.
Does that RCA converter come out with the right kind of a connector that would feed digital video directly into a modern-day flat screen set?
I don't know if it's got, I don't know if it has that capability. I'd have to check. I'd have to look into that. But right now, I'm just going into, digital to analog converter box, because I go into a DVD recorder first in case I really want to record something. And then from there it goes into the TV.
Yeah, there's a fancy digital cable that is the possible input to some of the modern sets. But if I had a reasonable quality converter box, and if I set out red, green, blue, and chrominance, would I be getting full fidelity into the modern digital TV, Paul? I mean, Eric, KE2EJ, K2RIW?
Guys, you need to get your nomenclature correct. Converter box generally would put out 525 analog NTSC, which includes a color burst. What you're calling red, green, and blue out of a master converter box would be Y, PR, and PB. What it is the luminance and the luminance minus the red component and luminance minus the blue component. They're matrixed out. But don't forget, you're taking your high def signal and pushing it down to fit in 525 lines. So you're definitely going to be quenching things up a bit.
So, some of these converter boxes, don't they also have digital compatible cable output connectors so that they put out the right format, or are you telling me that almost all the converter boxes are only made for 525 ordinary scanned lines, and therefore the real digital, which is a very different scan procedure, you're saying most converter boxes don't have true digital output ready for a display, is what I think you're telling me, KE2EJ, K2IW?
You got to consider what the converter boxes were designed for.
They were designed so that your TV set, when you hook up to the antenna, you got nothing. And you wanted to keep your TV set without having to go out and buy another one. So it made signals that were compatible with the old TV set.
Yeah, I haven't seen any converter boxes that have HDMI outputs. But then again, I don't know if they're still making converter boxes even at this point in time. So if they are, I would assume it's possible they have an HDMI output, but what's the point? Why would you need a converter box?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. The HDMI is not going to go into an old-fashioned CRT-type set. And if I did use, and many of the modern-day digital sets, I think they will accept red, green, blue, in which case I'll get a considerably lower resolution 525 scan lines on that screen, is what I think you're telling me. Is that true, Eric?
Let's be careful here, because your modern set will have a YPIPB, which is not red, green, and blue. It's matrix. But it'll be running at 1080i. It'll be running at 1920 by 1080, which will be the same resolution as you've got through the HDMI cable. So there's no difference in that respect. Actually, if you like to record stuff, and as you well know, HDMI prevents you from recording when the copy protect bit is turned on, one of the ways you can achieve is to take the component output and use that to record, and it doesn't have the copy protect stuff in it. It does in the analog form, but most of the recorders aren't even aware of it.
The converter boxes that I'm likely to own a couple of years ago, are any of them capable of putting out a signal, a output connector of some kind, RF or video, which is compatible with 1080i? Is there any chance I can get 1080i out of a converter box built a couple of years ago? Over to you, Eric.
With a very rare exception, which you would never run across anyway, the answer is no.
So, all of your converter boxes going all into all of your analog sets out there in Ronkonkoma, Paul, I think you're looking at ordinary 525 line video. You're not seeing high def video, is what I think is going on with your converter boxes. Bring me up to speed on that one, Paul. WS2N, K2LAW.
Yeah, I'm plugged into all CRT TVs, you know, 520. So that's all I'm going to see, even if it could change. That's it. And then, you know, Eric was talking about the cheating with the recording capability. Well, you do that with the cable box, you know, from Cablevision. If you don't want to, you know, if you want to record every now and then, you don't use the HDMI cable, you throw that away. And you plug the component cables in, you know, the three, not the composite ones, but the component ones. There's three cables, and then another two cables for audio. And the picture is exactly like the HDMI, but at least you can record. It's got some kind of a deal on there. I don't know what Eric said, but it's got some kind of a feature on the HDMI cable, or is it in a box that makes you so you can't record. Back to you, Jack WS.
Let's see if we have anyone else who has any further questions before we go over to the space report. So, any guys out there with any questions you'd like to discuss, normal TechNet type questions, give me a call, let us a name right now. P2RIW at TechNet.
WH4YY. In all this time you've been playing around these TV converters and so forth, have you ever measured the signal strength out of your antenna system with a test instrument to see what you're actually getting on different RF frequencies? Back to you, Dick.
I'm embarrassed to say I have not done that, Joe. My guess is you've taken a service monitor or spectrum analyzer and you've measured the raw RF coming out of your television receiving antenna, aerial. That's how you've seen the scalloping. That's how you've seen the co-channel interference. You've seen the funny carriers. You've seen the fact that when a mysterious carrier comes into the digital channel you want to watch, the converter goes bonkers. So you've watched all of that directly, either on your service monitor or on a spectrum analyzer. Is that true, Joe? W2RYY, K2RIW.
Yes, it's true. Not only have I looked at, but I've also listened to that pilot carrier and been able to determine by listening in AM mode if there's something else behind it that could be interfering with it. I've done it also. And the strongest signal I get from New York City is on RF Channel 3. It's about minus 45 dBm on the pilot carrier with the, you know, being able to adjust it properly. How's that for signal strength?
That makes some sense. It's the lowest channel, easier to transmit. And RF Channel 3 is really digital channel 33. Isn't that true, Eric?
The answer is yes.
And 33 has got 33-1, 2, 3, 4, and 10, as I remember. Crazy numbers. 1, 2, 3, 4. Dash 1, dash 2, dash 3, dash 4, and dash 10. Dash 10 is a kind of a weather channel. And so that's your strongest one. And it either does or doesn't have scalloping. And when you listen to that pilot tone, you sometimes hear a beat note when something else is heterodyning with it, is what I think you're telling me, Joe. And when you do see a heterodyning, I presume there's not very much heterodyning that your system will tolerate and still demodulate it. A guess on my part. W2RYY, K2RIW.
Well, being that you get two carriers almost on the same frequency within about maybe 50 hertz of each other, maybe as high as 100, I've seen on the same RF channel for those different other carriers coming up on the TV station. I can't measure the signal strength between carrier A and carrier B. I don't have that kind of capability to be able to do that. I can just tell you there's something else there behind it and spin the antenna around accordingly. But typically, if I can start hearing on AM at some sort of reasonable level, it's going to start affecting the TV's quality of reception quite easily. Typically, if I look at RF channel 33 and I start hearing it or getting the picture starting to break up, typically it comes to the other offending transmitters, WFSB in Hartford, which puts out a walloping signal if you point the antenna at Hartford, which is like three times the distance as New York is.
Yeah, is branded 33, which is really RF3, is that coming from Empire or is that coming from the other place in New York City? What do you think?
Four Times Square.
Okay. How many channels are coming from Four Times Square? You've told me this a couple of times. I'm going to write it down again. Eric, K3J, K2RIW.
Okay, full time out of Four Times Square is Channel 3 and Channel 24, which you see is Channel 25. Time, and I mean full time, it's their standby transmitter is WABC.
So you're telling me what I see as over the air branded Channel 7 really occasionally could come from Four Times Square?
That's correct.
How often does that happen?
Quite a lot, actually. That did happen an awful lot while they were building the mooring mast at Empire.
Yeah, that's my next question. If a human being is climbing the mooring mast at Empire in order to do a repair, change a light bulb, whatever, does Ford Times Square take over all of those broadcasts during that time?
Well, they generally do that kind of work at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And there are some stations that actually have standby antennas, which are lower down on the Empire State Building. And there's a couple of stations that don't have anywhere to go except off the air. And then ABC is one of the lucky ones who happens to have facilities at Ford Times Square. They never go off the air. They just come from a different place.
The antennas on the mast at Empire State Building, I'm guessing, are close to 1,300 feet above the surface. You're going to correct me on that. And the broadcast antennas at Ford Times Square, roughly how many feet are they above the surface? KE2EJ, K2LAW?
I got a question too, Dick.
Right. Let's put it this way. Ford Times Square ends at floor number 52. Empire ends at floor number 102, and the antennas are above that. Although, when the World Trade Center went down, I and a bunch of wizards put up a set of antennas on the 81st floor, which are now, those are gone, but they put the standbys right down at the very bottom of the mast, so when they have to do maintenance on this, the mooring mast itself, the guy will make his way up to a certain point, and then they will switch from the antennas that are active above and switch to the guys that are below, so that there's no safety issue.
When they switch to the antennas below, do they have the same gain? Are we losing a little bit of signal strength during the repair operation?
Yeah, you're losing a whole bunch. So again, some of them go off the air like this. The bees have a nice standby, 13, 11, 7. No, not 7. Nice. 13, 11. Those are the two bees. And what they do is they actually go off a lot of the other guys because where the UHF antennas mounted, there's actually two UHF antennas up there. And that's why sometimes you'll get 9-1-2-3-4 or not 9, whichever one it is, or I think it's 9-2. 9-2 is actually coming from where 5-1-2 come from. And 5-3 comes from where 9 comes from. So there's two UHF antennas on Empire. One of them has CBS, ABC, and NBC. And then the other one's got Fox, LN9, and the other one's got Fox on it. I think it's just that. That's why a lot of people have trouble picking up, getting to 5 and when they get everything else, and vice versa.
Right after 9/11, when we had to use Alpine, I am guessing Alpine had almost the right altitude, but the problem is it came from a different azimuth direction, and for us on Long Island, there's a lot more line-of-sight miles to Alpine. Was that the main reason that the people on Long Island suffered so seriously when those broadcasts were coming from Alpine, New Jersey? KE2EJ, K2LAW.
K2RW, K2J. Most people only had to suffer through Alpine for the first 2 months. Actually, I started putting a transmitter into Empire started making Empire after we went on the Alpine, which took for 3 days to get Alpine up and running, and that's a story in itself, like when things kind of went down. All the big manufacturers like Dielectric and Harris, they just put everything they had on a truck and sent it down to Alpine. Alpine's not the same height as Empire is, or as the World Trade Center was, rather. And it's really...